M34, number 2A.
Marriage is the outcome, Christianity is the outcome of the Christ idea of atonement and Eucharist, and atonement and Eucharist finds its power in prayer, because prayer is that power which helps us to lay down the mortal. And in doing so, really, we find finally a sense of the fourth of a chapter on spiritualism, where we say, after all, that unity in the world is very nice and so on, but I have to see right through that thing and see that finally and actually only that which is spirit, infinite spirit, as the only spirit, as the only substance, is the thing that matters. Then we rise, so to say, above the world. We may be still in the world, but not from the world. We rise above the world spiritually into a completely new dimension of consciousness. Then we are one with God. Well, can you see the approach to God? Then let us go to the second vertical column, the Christ. Here, these chapters have a completely different office. Those four chapters, animal magnetism, science, theology, medicine, physiology, footsteps of truth, they have a completely different office. Namely, the Christ office. The Christ office in which direction? Namely, the Christ I have put here translates God to consciousness, and thereby translates error back into truth. Can you see the translation sense? Both translation sense. You know that Mrs. Eddy gives us in 116 and 15 and 16 two translations. The translation of immortal mind and then the translation of mortal mind. And these two go hand in hand. They happen parallel. They are synchronized, so to say. It is that which Mrs. Eddy says in that important article, One Cause and Effect, where she says something like this: Christian Science translates mind to mortals. And then two or three pages later and says that Christian Science translates matter back to mind. These are the true translations. First, the translation of God to man. And in the measure as the translation of God to man happens, in that measure, naturally, matter is translated back into its original meaning, mind. These two translations are symbolized in that second column of the Christ. Again, the title there is, The Christ Translates God to Consciousness. That's the message of the Christ from God to man. And in doing so, thereby translates error back into truth. Naturally, you get here that feeling that God is doing everything. See, a much greater sense that God is working out everything. In the first four chapters, especially in the first three chapters, somehow you still had a sense that you have to do something in order to be one with God. But when we come to the second vertical, the Christ, then we begin to realize that once we have touched the infinite, see, in the fourth chapter we have touched the infinite, and the infinite communicates itself to us as the infinite. So this whole thing is then explained through the Christ chapters, which says, once through the Word chapter we have touched the infinite, in the Christ chapter it says, that infinite touches you. You can't help it. Therefore, what we understand is always demonstrated. What we understand, that's the word order, that always has in itself the power of the Christ, that it acts and demonstrates itself in the way the Christ wants to demonstrate. Because through atonement and Eucharist we are willing to lay down and have no personal views about anything. So, here we come now to this Christ vertical, and the first chapter in it is Animal Magnetism Unmasked. It's a short chapter, and I have in mind, if I can do it somehow this week or next week, to give you perhaps an hour's talk on the question of animal magnetism. Because I feel the nearer one comes to Boston, the more people are afraid of animal magnetism. The first chapter in the Christ column is Animal Magnetism Unmasked. It just shows that God has a Christ, and because God is all, that Christ works out the maximum of good. That's one of the pivots in that chapter, around about the middle of the chapter, that it works out the maximum of good, and therefore there can't be an anti-Christ, which is animal magnetism. So she debunks really there all the arguments of animal magnetism, and debunks it by showing that animal magnetism is just an illusion, it has no reality, it's absolute unreal, that it is just sinful. Then she goes on and says that it has no scientific foundation, it's really unscientific, that it has no existence, it's non-existent, therefore it is unjust, it is not within the theodicy of Christian Science, it has no rightness, and so on, and it's just a completely frustrating concept of being. And as I said, I will take the time, if possible, on Friday afternoon or evening to go over the whole development of the subject of animal magnetism in Mrs. Eddy's mind. Because it seems, or not only seems, but can prove it through the various revisions of Science and Health, how Mrs. Eddy was not at all clear about the nature of animal magnetism until very late, until, say, the great turning point came 1891, but before she wasn't clear about animal magnetism. And I show you what that influence is still here, and that if we would see the development of the whole subject right through to 1910, that we would have a completely different concept of animal magnetism than what people usually have. So, once having stated that the Christ is all and works and works and works and works as the manifestating power of all good, then she goes on to that next chapter, Science, Theology and Medicine. That chapter which she wrote last, and which is one of these crucial chapters, I have put down, the Christ translates the false constituents of existence back into the divine constituents of being. You can see at once Christ as the Christ in its own nature, so to say, namely the Christ that on the level of Christian Science is translating all that is wrong into that which is right. Here, she first shows, through the chapter Science, Theology and Medicine, how she got the revelation of that Christ, and how that Christ really translated the fundamental constituents of a mortal consciousness into the constituents of a divine consciousness. It's a very scientific chapter, showing really how it was revealed to her through the nature of God as mind, how that would replace mortal mind for the divine mind, how that would replace so to say, a material concept for the spiritual idea. How it would replace sense testimony for soul testimony. Can you hear? It is really translating the most fundamental constituents of consciousness, mortal mind, back into the divine mind. Matter, back into spirit. Sense testimony, back into soul. Then afterwards translates really the human theories and dogmas of everything back into the system and science of God. Then in theology she shows how it translates that resisting sense of theology, the dead sense of being, into a living sense of life. And then in the chapter Medicine, she shows how her revelation really translated the belief in the saving power of matter, of drugs, etc., back into the saving power of spiritual truth. Can you see? In this chapter, she begins to touch to the deepest level of mortal consciousness and says, what are the constituents of mortal consciousness? And begins to take them one by one through seven notes, here only through six stages, takes them one by one and translates mortal mind out of itself into mind, translates matter out of itself into spirit, translates sense testimony out of itself into soul, translates material science, doctrines, dogmas, out of itself into the system of the divine principle, translates a superficial sense of life, a dogmatic sense of life, a theological sense of life, a religious sense of life, an ecclesiastical sense of life, out of itself into the living life of the one big life. And then tries to show how it translates our belief in anything else but God as the Savior, our trust in matter, in drugs, in hygiene, in air, in climate, and so on, out of itself into the consciousness of truth. See, can you see Christian Science translates God to mortals, to our consciousness, and in doing so translates error back into truth? That's a great, enormous, fundamental chapter showing that here consciousness has to be changed. When that consciousness is going to be changed from an erroneous to a divine consciousness, then at once we have the result, the outcome, and we come to the next chapter, which has the Christianity touch, Christ's Christianity, namely physiology. Physiology shows, I tried to summarize it and say, that Christ translates mortal manhood back into immortal manhood. Can you see, every time we come to Christianity, it is the focal point is man and the universe. That's the outcome of God's working. And so physiology shows how this new consciousness which we have gained in science, theology and medicine has as the outcome, as the effect, that it translates the mortal concept of man into an immortal concept of man. Out of the physiological concept, the biological concept of man, out of the structural and atomic concept of man, into the spiritual concept of man. It's all about that. So logical. And then we come to footsteps of truth, to the science touch, where we always begin to see that everything is in the way of being. Here I summarized it and said that Christ translates an unscientific consciousness back into a scientific consciousness. See, now she shows through the footsteps of truth, through a wonderful clear structure of twice times, seven times seven. It has 98 subtones. Wonderful. First it shows the seven times seven in an absolute way, then the seven times seven in a human way, quite clearly, always write according to a synonym matrix, and shows how those footsteps of truth are always divine footsteps of truth. That it is that those footsteps of truth are footsteps of consciousness. And in the measure as we take the divine footsteps of consciousness, that in that measure we lose the erroneous steps of consciousness, and therefore the divine is really touching the human, divinity embracing humanity, humanity embracing divinity. These are the great two parts in it, showing that divine consciousness embraces humanity, that human consciousness which has been formed by that divine consciousness is really showing forth, even in the human, the divine. So that there is no more a duality between the divine and the human. The divine and the human coincide. Always when we come to science, you know, to the last horizontal of science, it's always a sense of oneness. See, in Christian Science versus Spiritualism, the first one, over there, I can't reach it. You see, we have the oneness of God, the monism of God. Here we have the monism of consciousness, where there is no more human and divine, where they embrace each other, just as Jesus was showing divinity embracing humanity. Where we give up that funny belief of separating the divine and the human and say, well, this is divine and this is human, these are two worlds, where we begin to see one, namely the moment we have consciousness, divine consciousness, that divine consciousness has its impress, its impact on the human, so that it is not human, but it is divinity embracing humanity, in divinity showing forth itself even in the human and as the human. So here we get this whole translation. You see, at that point we have everything is now translated. We have no more truth and error. We have no more the divine and the human. The Christ is that which has only a one-value logic. The Christ does not know good and evil. And therefore, if we think in terms of the science matrix, we can never anymore think in terms of good and evil and separating good and evil. We can no more think in terms of right and wrong, of mortal and immortal, because the Christ standpoint is a one-value logic, an infinite one-value logic, which just has itself and has no duality in itself. Therefore, the effect on the human is that this one-value logic resolves our dualistic logic, our dualistic thinking, until finally in the footsteps of truth we just see the divine embracing the human and the human embracing the divine, that it is one and the same thing, only looked at from different standpoints. Alright. Now, at that point, something changes completely. Really, if one reads the textbook with a spiritual ear, you know, if one has in one's consciousness a cultured structural consciousness, then you read the textbook such that you can at once see where the breaks come in, where a completely new subject is taken up. Not only a new sentence, because one sentence doesn't resemble the other sentence, but a new subject is coming up. The moment you come to the Christianity chapters, with chapter creation, signs of being, some objections, answers, then Christian Science practice, these are the Christianity chapters, you at once feel a completely different proposition put before us. Whereas up to now, in the Christ chapters, all was about how does God come to man? How does it come to consciousness? How does it come to the mortal? How does it come to our human life? All that is now finished, or all that is now dealt with, and a completely new question is put forward. You know how the first sentence in creation is, eternal truth is changing the universe. And then shows how chaos is turned into order. And you at once feel, now, she begins to show the nature of the universe. A focal point we have always seen when we come to Christianity, see, when we come to the Christianity, is always on idea, on the universe, on the outcome of the Christ idea. So these Christianity chapters I have, and put the subtitle, The Universe of Ideas. Can you see in the top? Again, can you sense the order from the Word to the Christ to Christianity? It's the same what we have been doing yesterday, where we always first said, there is a God, second, that's the Word, second, there is a Christ which expresses that God to the point of idea. At the moment it touches the point of idea, you remember, in the Christianity, or the moment it touches the point of idea, it goes over to Christianity and says, how big is the idea? I want to know how big the idea is. And the chapter on creation, you can read it as often as you like. I think you are always impressed by that short chapter, because it gives you that sense of infinite idea, of the infinitude of the universe. Everything there is infinite, 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 infinite. But not so much infinite God, but the infinite idea. And the development of the infinite idea. So, creation is the first point where, therefore, the Word defines the nature of the universe as idea. It's a wonder, that's why it's called creation. See, that term creation must be understood properly. You have a creator, that's the Word. That creator creates, expresses the creator, creates. That will be the Christ, the expression of it. And what is being created by the creator is the creation, the outcome. So here the word creation does not mean the act of creating. Is that clear? See, else we wouldn't understand the chapter. It is showing the outcome of the creating of the creator as the creation, as an outcome, not as a producing, expressing concept. Is my English good enough to express that? So, see, therefore, we don't find in the chapter creation, for instance, the days of creation, because that is showing the step-by-step bringing into being of something new, you see. Whereas here, it is showing the universe of idea as it already is. What consists the universe? It's the universe of ideas. That's the word sense of Christianity. I have written here, infinite ideas constitute creation. So it shows the nature of ideas. That's the word. The statement, the presentation of the subject. If the whole subject of the whole vertical is the universe of ideas, so the word must first state what is the nature of these ideas. And says this universe consists of ideas, these ideas are infinite, and it's a mighty wonderful chapter. All about idea, the nature of idea. Not so much about the nature of God. The focus is now on idea. The moment we know, oh, we have to do with a universe of ideas, something in us asks and says, well, is that universe of idea as it is and stays as it is? Is it static? The work is always, the world alone always gives somehow a bit of static sense. And so the Christ must come in. We have seen the Christ is the expression of the world, the dynamic of the world, you see. And so it shows, yes, and these ideas have a Christ. They evolve. These ideas are not static. They operate. They evolve. And the whole chapter on science of being shows now the operation, so to say, of the ideas. What did I put it here? Oh yes, I put it just that way. Ideas operate as dissolving a material concept of the universe. It is the operation of ideas to dissolve illusions. You know that chapter is a very big chapter. At the end of the chapter is even the platform. It's an important chapter. It's all about that universe of idea. The question is the universe life, substance, intelligence in matter? Or is it that life, substance, and intelligence are ideational? That's the great question. What is the evolution of ideas compared with the evolution of matter? And gives a wonderful sense of that operational sense that ideas have a Christ. That each idea is not static, that each idea has in itself that Christ consciousness that it operates and operates and operates. That's why we can't trust so much an idea. That's why we don't have to trust that I teach right and that I teach as much as possible. The main thing is that I know that these ideas which we entertain in consciousness, that they operate. They operate in the class, they operate after the class. These ideas operate 10 years from hence just as much as they do now. One thing is sure, you can no more be the same people. That is one thing. You can do what you want. You will no more be the same. Because even in the slightest way, you have got hold of something which is of the nature of idea, and those ideas will not let you go anymore. Just as Jacob said to that angel, I don't let you go except you bless me. And you got the idea. It touched you. And it will not let you go until it blesses you. That we can be sure. And it's not my teaching. It's the idea. It's not my my merit. It's the idea. The moment the idea is seen in a slight way, it begins to operate, it begins to grow, and to grow, and to grow, and to grow, until it's mighty. That's what the chapter shows in its first part. In its second part, it gives a historical example, right from Adam up to now, how the idea has been growing through the ages. From Adam through over to Jacob and so on, the prophets and Jesus up to Christian Science has grown and grown and grown. And then gives the calculus of this idea in the platform. The four times four in the platform. Showing the idea has a Christ. The idea has operational power. So it shows us very, very nicely that Christian Science is not making truth work. And it is not something of thinking as hard as hell and as hot as hell to get anywhere. It is just the other way around. To accept the idea, because the idea has a Christ. Not our thinking has a Christ. Our thinking hasn't a Christ, it's the Antichrist, it's animal magnetism. But to accept the idea in consciousness, that is the thing. And once we accept the idea in consciousness, we are at the point of creation, we see the nature of idea. then as a science of being, we see the operation of these ideas and are quite sure that they are going to operate the way they like.